Welcome to episode number 14 of Tech Talk today on WCCR 94.5 LPFM, live from the beautiful campus of University of the Cumberlands in Williamsburg, Kentucky. Triple T provides you with the latest news in the tech world and our opinions of what it all means. As always, we enjoy tweets to @WCCRTechTalk during the show with your comments and ideas. I'm Justin Hensley.
And I'm Kurt Lawson. Let's get Triple T started with this week's Tech Roundup. Okay, let's see here. One recurring theme we see in a lot of these episodes is net neutrality, and AT&T seems to be the first one to propose a compromise. An anonymous reader on Slashdot submits, the net neutrality debate has been pretty binary. The ISPs want the ability to create so-called fast lanes, and consumers want all traffic to be treated equally. Now AT&T is proposing an alternative, fast lanes under consumer control. Their idea would be would allow individual consumers to ask that some applications, such as Netflix, receive priority treatment over other services such as email or online video games. The different services, such as from the FCC's current proposal, which tactfully allows internet providers to charge content companies for priority access to consumers, but doesn't give the consumers a choice in the matter. AT&T said, such an approach would preserve the ability of internet service providers to engage in individualized negotiations with content companies and for a host of services, while prohibiting the precise practice that has raised Fastlane concerns. It's not perfect, but it is a push in the in an earnest attempt at a compromise we've seen from either side, and it suggests the discussion can move forward without completely rejecting one group's wishes. So
it's all about money. I mean, look at what AT&T said there in the quote. It says, such an approach would preserve the ability of internet service providers, a.k.a. AT&T, to engage in individualized negotiations with content companies for a host of services, which they would pay money for. It's all about money. I mean, this is, net neutrality is a big deal because, it's another way that internet service providers are going to make a killing by, providing the service that they do. But it's going to, unfortunately, come at a cost to normal, regular Joe consumers like you and I.
Right.
Interesting stuff. And they're essentially trying to back up and punt and reword what they have to say and just say it differently. And in my opinion, it's all the same thing.
I do feel like at least one ISP is at least, putting a face that they are, on the team of consumers. Whereas, Comcast, I'm sure, would never compromise. Not saying AT&T is any better, but it sounds like they're at least trying to make it look like they've got us in mind. But, I feel the same way you do, so.
They don't have you in mind when you call their support, I can tell you that much. Network Word article about Apple. I think we're going to talk a lot about Apple and Microsoft today. But Apple outlined its new privacy policy and set up a new site to explain what information it collects from users and how it handles it as the company enters new areas like health tracking and mobile payments that have potential privacy implications. And just in case you didn't know, obviously the Health Kit is out we're going to talk about them in a minute. Health Kit's not out yet. And the Apple Pay is going to be out with with iPhone 6 and iPhone 6 Plus coming out in the next few weeks. So that's what we're talking about here. The CEO of Apple, Tim Cook, said in a letter on the new section of the website, quote, we don't build a profile based on your email content or web browsing habits to sell to advertisers. We don't monetize the information you store on your iPhone or in the iCloud, and we don't read your email or your messages to get information to market to you. End quote. Apple was blamed recently for the leak of celebrity photos from iCloud, which were thought to have been accessed by hackers trying out different combinations of usernames and passwords. The company on Tuesday introduced an optional two-step verification for iCloud accounts that would require users to enter a numerical passcode sent by SMS to their phones, besides also entering their usernames and passwords. So, Apple's just trying to cover their rear ends here and make sure that everything they do is they at least can't get sued for, or at least when a lawsuit does come, it won't.
We've taken proper steps.
Exactly. Yeah, so yeah. I mean, you know, and this is true for any company. They got to do those things.
Oh, absolutely. Satya Nadella, and the Microsoft CEO, addressed a wide variety of topics at the Seattle Metropolitan Chamber of Commerce annual luncheon today. That's a long. Speaking broadly about his vision for the company and its place in the Seattle region. But even in the midst of some friendly questioning, one topic was unavoidable. How can Microsoft dig itself out of this giant hole in smartphones and tablets? Or, as Seattle Chamber President and CEO Maud Dowdon, put it more diplomatically, how do you see yourself positioning Microsoft to increase its market share to become an even stronger competitor? To which Nadella replied, in essence, pay no attention to our current Windows Phone market share. He didn't actually say that, but the actual answer is quite long. It says, we define mobile in the marketplace. We don't think of it by today's market share positions on a given form factor. Devices and device sizes will come and go. Even within a single year, you will be changing multiple phones. It's more about the mobility. In fact, if there's anything central to our vision, it's don't think of the device at the center. Think of the individual, the people at the center. And then the platforms and productivity experiences get built with that at the center. So you will have many devices, and you will have small devices, large devices, and devices that have not yet been created that will come in time. But what's going to be the constant? Your digital memories, your productivity experiences across all of those devices. That's really the center of how we think about innovating today and into the future. He keeps on going about the Windows Phone and Office and Skype and Minecraft, every 8-year-old's phone for sure. Skipping a little bit here, he's basically saying, kind of like how Apple says we sell an experience. I think he's kind of saying that, thinly veiled. He's saying, don't look at, this product isn't doing well, but this one is. Obviously, they dominate in the business productivity with Office. Obviously, they still have a firm hold of, of the operating system in the business. That's undeniable. They are, they're slowly slipping. Apple is catching up there. But, you take that, Microsoft is successful. Look at Windows Phone by itself. Microsoft is not successful. So I think he's saying, we're more than the sum of parts or whatever, but... whatever.
Well, I mean, he is obviously very cloud-based in nature. And, I mean, that's what he's going to try to push. Mm-hmm. He's going to answer the questions about cloud-based stuff, and he's going to push off the questions about other things. And that's what he's done here. I mean, I think essentially this is, let me give you some words here that, you can put in an article that really is just a bunch of me beating around the bush. Instead of saying, hey, Windows Phone didn't make it and it's probably not going to make it.
Right.
Windows Phone was a great thing, 12, 15 years ago?
They basically invented, the smartphone. Right. BlackBerry invented the syncing your email to it, basically, or making it secure, or buying businesses in. But essentially, as a smartphone, Windows essentially created it, in my personal opinion. Now, everyone else has perfected it, made it better, different form factors, different sizes, getting different versions that work much better, but...
But these were back in the days of Palm OS, and Palm OS is not around anymore,
They didn't change with the times.
They didn't change with the times, and Microsoft didn't either, and the only thing that was able to keep them in the business was the money that they have. And so, it's interesting, these moves that Microsoft is making to... essentially say, okay, we are Windows, it's not Windows Phone, it's not Windows 9 on your computer or your laptop or your tablet, it's Windows. And so, market speaking, that's a good thing, to market your brand across the board. But they need to have products that are going to sell well against major competitors like Apple and Android and Samsung and all these other folks. And so that's something they're going to have to do.
I agree.
Network World article was release of the new mobile operating system on Wednesday. Apple has become the first smartphone maker to enable by default a kill switch not to kill you, but to kill your phone, that can lock and secure a stolen phone. Smartphones, both Apple and Android-based, are attractive targets for thieves, obviously, and law enforcement officials hope to kill the hope that the kill switch will change that. The software is capable of remotely locking and disabling a phone if stolen, and only allowing the handset to be unlocked with the correct password. That action essentially makes the phone useless, reducing the resale price to close to zero. Now, California lawmakers recently passed legislation that makes a kill switch mandatory on all new phones sold in the state starting July 2015. Apple's last major operating system update, iOS 7, introduced the kill switch software, which they called an activation lock, but it wasn't enabled by default, which is something the California law requires. Mm-hmm. So with iOS 8, the software becomes the first to conform to all the elements of the California regulation. So, you know, making it a little harder for someone to run by and swipe your phone off of you, you know, they pick up a lady's purse or grab a phone out of a guy's pocket or something like that, while, you know, or bump, you know, they're really good at that, you know, yeah. Bump and run and things like that.
Pickpocket.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's good they're coming out with this stuff, the ability to be able to lock your device up and be able to track it. You know, I like the idea of being able to track my phone down if I lose it.
Yeah. Real question here is, why is California so weird?
We don't have time in the show to talk about that.
Sorry.
We only got 45 minutes left, Kurt. That's about 45 days worth of topics there.
All right. I've got more on that, but not good for Tech Talk. Warning. There is the iTunes virus, which has been superseded by the Bono virus. Yes, we all know iTunes was a virus, and it's a darn nasty one, too. I mean, you get an iPhone, and then you get this piece of software that automatically is installed when you plug it into your computer. But now the iPhone, iPad, and iEverything owners are learning that Apple has now released the Bono virus, which fills up your drive and won't stop playing a cacophony of sound. Apple has released a special virus scanner to get rid of it. Of course, I'm talking about the U2 album Songs of Innocence that the company automatically downloaded if you have automatic downloads and turned on any of your iOS devices. There's been a lot of public outcry against this. Most people, well, it's either a mix of I don't like U2, so I don't want it on my phone, and Apple, you're putting things on my phone without telling me, and this is taking up space. So that after last week's introduction of the iPhone 6, iPhone 6 Plus, and Apple Watch, the news conference where U2 closed the event with a live performance, Apple made Songs of Innocence free to every customer who had an iCloud account, which is essentially every iOS and OS X device owner. There has been, the reason I'm actually saying this whole thing, is there is a way to remove it if you want to. It's linked, let's see, it's on Code Project. I guess we could put this on our page, but... Computer World is where I found this. Apple releases banned Bono tool after customers complain of free music. So,
is it really taking up space, though?
If you click to download it, it will. If you have automatic downloads, and if you just play one and hit that little cloud button, it will automatically download it.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So, honestly, it's just there if you have streaming turned on or whatever. Otherwise, it won't automatically take up space.
But now, correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that, okay, if you're a user out there and you've downloaded the new iOS 8, if you go to your music folder on your iOS device, you're going to see this in there. My understanding is, though, you cannot get rid of it just showing up in there, right? You can delete the downloads from your device, but you can't...
It's still going to show up
there. It's still going to show up there, right?
That's where they released this. Let's see here.
Oh, but you can make it not show up.
You have to have this tool, though. Let me see if I can find it.
So it's an actual tool that you can...
The album removal tool offered a faster way to banish the band. If the songs have already been downloaded to local storage, you still have to manually delete them.
So is it an app?
Let me try to see exactly where it is.
Because that's interesting. I've actually had people ask me before when they've had, like... things that they've downloaded to their iCloud account, like maybe a TV show series or something like that, and they just decide, hey, I don't even see this TV show series in my iCloud account anymore. How do I get rid of it? Well, you can't. Right. As far as I know, I mean, I've never seen a way to get rid of it.
I've seen a way to hide them, But I'm not seeing where it's completely gone.
Right, because it's something you purchased.
Right. The tool available from an Apple URL removes the album from a user's iCloud account. But skipping down a little bit. This prompted numerous websites and publications, including CNET, to spell out instructions for deleting it from local storage, hiding it from the view to prevent it reappearing. The album removal tool offered a faster way to banish the band if the song... Yeah, I already said that. So YouTube frontman Bono didn't address... This is my favorite part. Didn't address controversy directly in a September 9th post to the group's website. This guy's full of himself. But many of... let's see. And for the people out there who have no interest in checking us out, look at it this way. The blood, sweat, and tears of some Irish guys are in your junk mail. It's like, okay, you're not full of yourself.
Good for them. They're on everybody's iOS device now.
Well, to be honest, what this commemorated was the, I think, 10-year anniversary of them making that commercial. The one of the iconic commercials where you see... big solid color, and then somebody in black dancing with like little white headphones.
Oh yeah,
I think that was
for the original iPhone, right?
iPod.
That was for the original iPod. Okay,
I think.
Okay.
To celebrate the 10-year anniversary of our iPod commercial, Apple bought the album as a gift to all their music customers. So,
I bet they paid a pretty penny for that. Recode article about acquisitions, UberSense, which makes an app that helps coaches and athletes analyze videos so they can perfect their form and technique, has been acquired by sports team software company Huddle. Now, Huddle, they do like...
Video game footage.
Exactly, yep, yep.
Not so, video game, game. Game, actual
game footage.
Real game.
They do game video footage.
Like football, yeah. Especially big on football.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry.
So, video game footage.
It's all my brain.
Yeah. Users of the app include at Olympic level figure skaters, rowers, track and field athletes, gymnasts, speed skaters, skiers, and snowboarders. There are also professional and recreational uses across many sports, and even surgeons and physics researchers use it as well. The app is reputed to be especially good at video features like slow-mo, frame-by-frame, tracking user over time, and side-by-side. And it's iOS. It's on iOS for now. Sorry, Kurt. Though Android is on the way, and they didn't say anything about Microsoft.
Never will.
UberSense had demoed at Dive into Mobile last year, and the predecessor for the upcoming Code Mobile conference in October. It has 2.5 million downloads and about 500,000 monthly active users. And while terms of the deal haven't been announced yet, UberSense said that the price was much more than its previous valuations, and Huddle said it was the largest acquisition of date or to date, including the replay analysis group that they bought.
Hmm.
So it sounds like a good purchase for Huddle. I mean, the ability to... take a play and break it down in slow-mo, but then also I've seen this type of thing used in golf. You set up a good video camera. You can use the iOS. It's an app, so you can use an iPad or an iPhone, and you take a slow-mo video of you hitting the golf ball, and then it analyzes and says, okay, you know, here's what's wrong with your swing. And so they use this in sports for, you know, golf, basketball shots, those kind of things.
Wow.
So, pretty cool stuff.
Well, interesting. Let's see here. I saw an article that says, a detailed look, how is Microsoft a different technology company compared to its rivals? Let's see. Now, I guess we won't get into the history of Microsoft, but Win Beta follows Microsoft, their products, and their services. But how is Microsoft as a technology company different from its competition? In their heyday, Microsoft was the top dog in the realm of anything dealing with technology. Anyone who wanted to be a major player in the field of technology had to deal with Microsoft. For the most part, the company gained its dominance through the Windows operating system being so popular and owning 90% of the personal computer market. Today, however, they are playing a different game. Now, Microsoft only controls 14% of the device share. This current situation is very different from how Microsoft is used to doing business. Now Microsoft has to develop their products and services on other platforms to be successful. And of course, that 14% device share, we said, is basically every device, right?
Right, yeah. We were talking about this before we came on air, and so that 14% is devices. So we're talking phones,
tablets,
computers, tablets, et cetera, et cetera.
Let's see. Continuing on. To understand how Microsoft performs compared to Apple, Amazon, and Google, a system must be established. Now, there's this big, long article, and shows a really cool... if you actually read through it, which I guess we can still post it on there, on our own Facebook page, there's this chart that shows a list of devices, iPhone, iPad, Mac, Android, Chrome OS, Windows Phone, Windows, Modern Windows, Fire Phone, Fire Tablet, Web, and Mobile Web. it actually shows each of these companies on the other axis and shows, you know, do they support, how well they support each device. Obviously, for, say, the iPhone, Apple fully supports it. And for, say, Android, Google fully supports it. Well, if you drill down these lists, some of them, you know, aren't supported so well. And one very interesting thing on the actual page shows, for instance... I guess it'd be best if you honestly could see the chart, but for instance, Apple, as for how well their support is for Android, basically they only have the Beats headphones, but they don't have iTunes, iBooks, iCloud, iWork, or iMessage on Android, understandably. But Apple has all their products on iPhone and iPad, and everything but Beats on the Mac. So just to show you an example of how they support it. And just going to Google, Google supports everything on iPhone, iPad, but only two things, Chrome and Google Drive on the Mac.
So if you change the numbers over, and we're looking here at this chart,
yep.
Kurt and I are looking at it at the same time. If you put it on a 1 to 10 scale and look at the company that provides the best support for different products, so Microsoft gets about a 7 out of 10 in supporting these different products that Kurt mentioned, from the iPhone to Android to Windows Phone, the Fire Tablet, all the way through these different devices. On the other hand, Apple gets a 3 out of 10. Mm-hmm. Just kind of putting in a numerical there, 7 out of 10 versus a 3 out of 10 as far as providing support, applicational support for these different platforms.
Yeah. And Amazon is just a hair lower than Microsoft. It still rounds out to 7 out of 10. Mm-hmm. And Apple, yeah, you said 3 out of 10. Google gets about 5 out of 10 or, you know, half or whatever. It's very interesting to read. But basically, Microsoft will support you regardless of your device. Microsoft is the best, has the best support for other devices. Interesting. And, you know, I guess they're a software company, so that makes sense.
This is pretty historically correct for Microsoft. I mean, they have always been the ones who have been backward compatible.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that up until Windows 7 allowed you to run stuff in a Windows 3.1 mode. I mean, you know, you could...
Forgot about that.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, they're historically backward compatible And historically, they bend over backwards for software and different developers to be able to use their software, operating systems.
Visual Studio. I mean, I can run it and it'll run on almost any other thing of Windows. I mean, you might have to install what's called basically the tools that the program requires, but I mean, it's so easy to run Visual Studio and develop.
It's this chart that I'm seeing here placing Microsoft at 7 out of 10 for providing support for other devices as far as their applications go and their support platform. That doesn't surprise me just because they are so willing to provide a platform that is good for everyone. And that's been... That's been their savior, and it's also been their killer same time.
Whereas what Apple only supports the last three major iterations of their OS.
Right.
OS X 10.7, 8, and 9, I think. And, you know, how far back does Microsoft? I mean, I could still run Windows XP programs. I could still run probably Windows 98 programs on my Windows 8 computer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, StarCraft is something I've actually put on it.
Because they're not making major changes to the kernel.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, they've made major changes to the kernel between XP and Vista, but it's still in a way that you can run other programs.
Yeah.
They can manipulate their kernel to run other programs.
Emulation. Well, not really true emulation, but yeah, well,
right.
That's enough on that.
Engadget article about security. You're going to see a lot of apps taking advantage of iOS 8's expanded Touch ID support. Now, Touch ID is on the... iPhone, where you can put your thumb or your other one of your other fingers over, or I guess you could use your toes too. I never tried it over the button, and it scans.
I'm going to try that.
And Kurt's going to try it, and it scans your fingerprint and makes sure that you are the one who's supposed to have access to it. We know it's not the most
secure
form, but it works. I like it. Don't bank on it. I mean, it's not the most secure thing. But speaking of banking, Mint has updated. Mint is a app that allows you to add your bank accounts to it so that you can track your finances. They've updated their iOS app to let you use your fingerprint to sign in rather than rely on a passcode. It's a simple step. It means that you can quickly check all your finances with an iPhone 5S, 6, or 6 Plus without compromising security. And you can thwart data thieves with a tough-to-crack code that you rarely have to enter yourself. So what you can do is you can put in a really long code and then say, okay, Touch ID, every time I touch the Touch ID, put in this code here into this app. So it works out pretty well for Mint, and to secure the banking stuff down a little bit. Does it work?
Yeah.
Wow, nice.
I totally just programmed a toe into my phone. Of course, now I'm putting it up to my face, so that's kind of frustrating. But
so if your hands get cut off, then you can use your toe to open your
iPhone. I can
iPhone.
Still use my toe.
Hey, that works. That's good to know. So you can use your toe to do Touch ID for your iPhone and your Mint app. Good to know. That wasn't even in the article.
Sorry.
Oh, we're breaking new ground here.
That's
on
exactly
Tech Talk
right.
Today.
Try your nose next time.
What is the worst ISP you know of?
All of them?
If you had to put one at the top of the list, it starts with a C.
Comcast.
Thank you, Comcast. Comcast declares war on Tor. That's funny. Tor, as we said earlier, is a basically the most anonymous browser there can be. The way I understand it, uses a series of relays to basically the ISP or anybody can't really track down where the traffic is coming from. There's so many different nodes, the way I understand it. So if you needed another reason to hate Comcast, the most hated company in America, they've just gotten it. They've just given it to you. They've declared war on the Tor browser. Reports have surfaced that Comcast agents have contacted customers using Tor and instructed them to stop using the browser or risk immediate termination of service. A Comcast agent named Jeremy allegedly called Tor an, quote-unquote, illegal service. The Comcast agent told his customer that such an activity is against usage policies. The Comcast agent then repeatedly asked the customer to tell him what sites he was accessing on the Tor browser. The customer refused to answer. The next day, the customer called Comcast and spoke to another agent named Kelly, who reiterated that Comcast does not want its customers using Tor. The Comcast agent then allegedly told the customer, users who try to use anonymity or cover themselves up on the internet are usually doing things that aren't, so to speak, legal. We have the right to terminate, fine, or suspend your account at any time due to the violating the rules. Do you have any other questions? Thank you for contacting Comcast. Have a good, great day. How did Comcast know its customers were using Tor in the first place? Because Tor browser provides online anonymity to its users, this would mean that Comcast is monitoring the online activities of its users and, among other things, check to see if they're following their acceptable use policy. Now, interestingly, Comcast released a post, this is an update to this article, setting their record straight on Tor, denying the above and stating the anecdotal chat room evidence described in these reports is not accurate, without explaining what accurate actually meant. So this is very interesting and unsettling, I guess. I mean, there are legitimate reasons to use Tor. There are people that are activists who might go deep into, I don't know, there are people that activists will put stuff, use that browser. There are people that will go undercover and send data back to their deep inside, say, another country that would monitor the usage, internet usage. You know, they're using Tor. So there's legitimate reasons to use Tor. But for ISP to flat out say, don't use this, we're going to cut you off if you keep using this. I mean, I don't know.
Well, I mean, terms of use is pretty important. I mean, they do have the legal right to turn you off if you violate their terms of use. You know, is using Tor violating their terms of use? I haven't read Comcast's terms of use. I would say that that's probably stretching it a little bit. But, you know, I kind of think of this, I kind of think of Tor as an analogy, or I kind of think of this analogy when I think of Tor. I mean, you know, I'm walking down an alley at, you know, 12 o'clock at night, it's dark, and I see a big guy that's bigger than me, and I'm a pretty big guy at 6'4", weighing in a little over 210 or 215, depending on how many tacos I eat each day. And, you know, and I see this guy coming down towards me in a trench coat, and he may be my neighbor for all I know. But
you're going to feel threatened.
But I'm going to feel threatened, right. Okay? You know, and Tor, the users of Tor, and the black shroud kind of around Tor kind of gives these users the look and feel that they're trying to do something that's not quite
legal.
Legit.
Yeah.
It's not quite kosher.
And I can understand where they're coming from.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, that's not really the question of this article. The question of this article is whether or not they've violated Comcast's acceptable use policy. And once again, I haven't read it. I don't know. I would say from reading other acceptable use policies that that's probably a stretch. Because, you know, they would have to have a way to say, okay, you have actually committed an illegal act using, you know, this circuit. Interesting stuff. I mean, mm-hmm. My suggestion, and this is just Justin talking personally, you know, my suggestion would be, you know, use a normal browser. If you have a reason to do something that you need total anonymity for, then don't do it on the internet. Because even with Tor, even with, whatever kind of site out there that says they can give you full anonymity, it's not true. It can be tracked.
Oh, yeah.
Good article. BGR article about shopping. Samsung managed to beat Apple. Shipping. Samsung managed to beat Apple. That's not the right article. This ain't about shipping. This is about something else.
Samsung managed to beat Apple to the punch?
Yes. I got my article messed up, but this is a good article nonetheless. Samsung managed to beat Apple to the punch by unveiling its flagship phablet. Okay, now a phablet with a PH in front of it. That's a phone and a tablet put together. So, in other words, think of sticking your iPad up to your face and saying, hello, are you there? And I don't really like the idea of a phablet. That's if you've got a big face or if you like a big phone in your hand, that's good for you. I don't like the idea. Anyway, they unveiled their flagship phablet for 2014 before Apple made its new iPhone 6 Plus official. But unfortunately, announcing a phone and launching a phone are two very different things. Android fans know exactly what they have to look forward to when the Galaxy Note 4 finally hits store shelves, but they won't be able to get one in their hands until nearly a month from now. Now, Samsung announced on Thursday that it will begin taking pre-orders for the new Galaxy phone on Friday, September 19th. That's tomorrow, which also just happens to be before the iPhone 6 and iPhone 6 Plus launch date.
Of course.
And my wife just texted me and said, if you have a big face, that's awesome. So that's ahead of the October 17th release. I don't know if I'm supposed to get from that. My wife thinks I have a big face, or she said it actually says, if you have a big face,
I could feel the love.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I gotcha.
So anyway, this long story short, big face article about the flagship phablet. Essentially, Samsung's trying to beat Apple to the punch. Yeah, yeah, they want to put out their iPhone. Or, I'm sorry, their iPhone, their Galaxy Note 4, which is a large format phone, before the iPhone 6 Plus comes out. Galaxy 4 specs, 5.7-inch quad HD super display, 2.7 gigahertz quad-core processor, 3 gigs of RAM, 16-megapixel camera, and the latest version of Android KitKat. And so that's what's coming out on... KitKat. That's what's coming out on the on the Galaxy. So good stuff there.
Yeah.
And
that's a good one.
Yeah. I think that rounds up our... our articles there for today, our tech roundup, and now I think we're going to app of the week.
of the week is on, drumroll please, Netflix. I'm sure everyone pretty much here has heard of Netflix. If not, it's pretty cool. I remember the first time I actually used it, it had already been out for like a year or two, and or like popular, I should say, for a year or two. And I thought, man, why haven't I got into this? All right, so what is Netflix? Just in case you don't know, you can watch TV shows and movies anytime, anywhere. Plans from $7.99 a month straight from their website. One really cool thing about Netflix versus, say, some other streaming services, maybe versus Hulu even, is you can set up multiple profiles under one account. I don't know what the limit is. I've seen at least four. But I've not actually seen that number published anywhere. The cool things about Netflix, pretty much almost any device that has access to the internet can access Netflix, except for Linux. I've actually tried that. I'm sure there's a way to do it, but I don't know it. But at least Lubuntu, no Netflix anywhere. So, like, I've got it on my Xbox 360, I've got it on a phone, I've got it on a tablet, another tablet I've used, I've got a smart TV that can do Netflix.
What about my printer? I got a printer that can access the internet. Sorry to throw a monkey wrench in your statement there.
I shouldn't have said that. It's a sweeping statement.
Sorry, I had to do it.
Oh, that's good, that's good.
So everything except for your Linux machine and your printer can access Netflix. Sorry, Kurt, go ahead.
Yeah, funny, you know how they have that internet-connected, like, refrigerators that are, you know, in the works or even already out. I'm sure, you know, sure they'll have a little
the Netflix
section.
App.
Netflix on my fridge. Anyway, some really cool things about Netflix. I mean, it is, I guess it is pretty much the de facto standard for how to do streaming. I mean, it's very cheap. I mean, I'm still amazed that it's $7.99 a month. I mean, people are complaining about a couple dollar increase, and that's if you're paying, like, brick and mortar rental fees for that. I mean, it's insane. I mean, you could just, I don't know.
Well, they've almost single-handedly knocked brick and mortar out.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, they, if I read this correctly, they actually went to Blockbuster and said, hey, we've got this idea. Do you want in on this? And they laughed. Said, nope. And now Netflix is laughing. But anyway, some really cool things about Netflix. Like I said, it's on pretty much any typical media viewing device that's internet connected. We'll go with that. there's a really cool section that I've not really had a chance to like test because I don't have kids. But there's an excellent kids site of the test. There's an excellent kids section. You'll start it up. You can set up the account as a kids account. And basically, I actually went into this on accident once, and it shows you a character of the show. So instead of having to find, I don't know, Mickey Mouse's House of Mouse, the kid will just see Mickey Mouse, and they hit that, and then it shows movies and TV shows that have that character all listed. So a kid doesn't have to remember, I want to see season 3 of, I don't know what, House of Mouse. I don't know what other Mickey Mouse shows there are, but it's pretty cool. Anything you want to add, or any cool stuff?
I don't have Netflix anymore, but I did have Netflix at one time, and I really liked it. I joined Netflix when the streaming wasn't as popular as the DVDs were.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
And so, yeah, sorry, I'm dating myself here. But I joined Netflix when the DVDs were more popular than the streaming, and then the streaming was coming along very quickly at the time. And I think I got, you know, two or three DVDs from them, and then I went into the streaming, and I had that for probably a couple of years, at least a year, and used that, you know, kind of as our primary source of entertainment, since at the time we didn't have anything except internet, and that's still the way we are at the house. And so, you know, we enjoyed it for a while, and I would go back to it in a heartbeat if I wanted to. It wasn't anything wrong with the service. I just wasn't using it enough to justify the $8 a month, or I think it was $5 a month, $6 a month then.
Something like that, yeah.
But yeah, good stuff.
Yeah. One, I guess, worth mentioning is there are no ads. You don't have to watch commercials. Like, for instance, on Hulu, you do. But Hulu is a different type of experience, which I could defend there. But again, no like commercials you have to sit through. Things queue up really quickly. That's pretty much it. All right, then.
So that was App of the Day?
That's App of the Day. And what is our next section here? So that was our App of the Week. Excuse me, App of the Week. So next we have, what, our Deep Dive?
Yep, Deep Dive's up next. All right. So time for our deep dive right now. And Kurt, I don't know if it's just me, but I'm getting some echo over here on my stuff. So what we're going to look at here is, and it's just me getting the echo, so I'm going to take my headset off here. So deep dive for today, first of all, we're going to take a look at some articles. First of all, Rogue Cell Towers, a Network World article about Rogue Cell Towers. Toward the end of July, ESD America, which are the makers of the ultra-secure crypto phone, said that their engineers and customers had discovered more than a dozen Rogue Cell Towers, also known as interceptors or IMSI catchers, around the U.S. New information shows that the discovered towers might only represent a small fraction of the whole, and it's been and what's been discovered doesn't account for the mobile base stations that are only active on a limited basis from place to place. Interceptors are a huge risk if used by a malicious actor. That's because once a device connects to them, the interceptor's operator can perform a number of tasks, including eavesdrop on calls or text messages, or in some cases, push data, which is spyware or malware sometimes, to the device. This is why they're only supposed to be used by law enforcement or government. However, that doesn't mean that the government or law enforcement haven't found themselves in a hot seat for abusing the interceptor's functionality. The potential for abuse and wide availability of technology, including homegrown versions of work that work just as well as their commercial counterparts, means that the existence of unknown interceptors are a major concern. So what we're talking about here, Kurt, is we're talking about these interceptors, and essentially what they're used for is they're... it's a man-in-the-middle attack, essentially. There is a device sitting between your cell phone and the legitimate cell phone tower, and it's a rogue interceptor. And these are being used by government agencies and also by police force to get the data that's going through the cell phone towers and get that to... agencies that may be able to use that. And you know, the question is, what are the implications here for cellular users? I mean, this article found several of these things in DC, and they're getting ready to start making more travels around the U.S. and look where they can find these at. So they actually found these interceptors in D.C. that were intercepting phone calls before they went through. And this crypto phone made by ESD America actually detects when it's going through a rogue cell phone tower.
Wow.
So, you know, what are the implications of this for cellular users? I mean, obviously, if a government agency is using it, they're trying to, you know, get some sort of dirt on somebody. But what about people who, you know, if the government has the ability to use these things and create these things, and regular Joes who are smart enough can do it too.
Right.
And, you know, what if you were discussing a very important new product with your colleague over the phone, and somebody picked that up and used that and went out and did the product before you?
Right. Wow, that's crazy. I mean, that opens up a whole new realm that cell phone manufacturers will have to come up with. And this is a whole uncharted territory. It's almost like you have to have, I don't want to say antivirus, but detection of just the voice calls. I mean, are you going to buy a phone that's ESD secure or something or other? I mean, for government to use it even, I don't want to get all political, but is this a result of the Patriot Act, you think? I mean, is this where, you know, the government created it, some other people have mimicked it, created it, their own versions of it? I mean, that's kind of crazy. I mean, I really, this is the first I've heard of this, so...
Well, and this became a big thing in the Black Hat conference.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, it has interesting implications. You know, first of all, And I think the issue I was having was just from me here. I think there's a little bit of a delay between what I'm hearing and what's coming over the radio.
The stream is good.
So okay. All right.
I just listened to it.
Yeah. There's nothing like a tech guy to get weirded out by that's going on.
Now, if the I can't guarantee the radio. We'll get feedback.
I think it's just my Mac. I think that's what's going on here where I'm recording this. But, you know, the implications behind this are, you know, what do cellular users need to watch out for? I mean, not everybody needs to go out and purchase a crypto phone when these come out. I mean, these aren't even out on the market yet. But not everybody needs to go purchase one. But, you know, I think it's always important, and on this show we talk about it a lot, but it's always important to realize the fact that anything you do through technology at all, or where technology is around you at all, could possibly be used for you or against you. So, you know, it's important to realize we talked about Tor, you know, and how what the implications of that were, you know, and this is kind of a little different because there are millions and millions of calls going through these interceptors every day, and the people on the other end don't even realize it.
Right.
So, you know, that to me is interesting to know. And in the article, they talked about, you know, well, what is the FCC going to do about this? The FCC, according to them, they don't even know who these belong to. I mean, if...
Policing them, they wouldn't even know how to start.
Right. And the FCC is not a policing organization. Right. I mean, they're not qualified to go out and be like, okay, take down your interceptor or we're going to shoot you. You know, that's not what the FCC can do.
I bet that's in the direction they're going to head. They're going to start getting more powers, and I bet we're going to have a whole revolution in how the FCC operates.
That may be the case, or they'll get the FBI involved.
Right, that makes sense too. And then, of course, then we'll have deregulation, and you know, we'll have a whole new industry that will exist to combat either the FCC or these sort of catchers. You asked though, what options are available to the consumer?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, I personally see three options. You either A, don't discuss anything that you, if you don't want anybody else listening in, don't discuss it over the phone. B, and this, I'm being facetious here, you can create what's called, you basically give the person you're going to talk to, you physically give them a decoding pad, I think it's called, a one-time use pad, and you'll say, you know, you say a string of characters, and they'll be able to decipher it because they have the, basically you're encrypting, or don't use technology. I mean, there's really no way you can get around it. We don't have the tools to say, my phone can do this. A crypto phone apparently can, but
right.
Other than that, I mean, I don't know of any way to get around this. I'd have to think on this one.
Well, and once again, I mean, anytime you're using technology, it's important to realize that what you're doing can and will be tracked.
Absolutely.
You know, so just be cautious. You know, and that's about all we can say about that. So, rogue cell phone towers. Another article here, a BGR article about Microsoft products. Actually, three articles here talking about Microsoft bringing out their universal mobile keyboard. Okay. And I got eyeballs from Kurt on that. Obviously, he hadn't heard about that one yet.
I haven't read your article, because I should have.
And also about Windows 9 being announced as well. So it looks like Microsoft has worked on several new product offerings this year. iOS apps were a big hit earlier in the year, and now they're showing off the new Universal Keyboard from their hardware section, and also Windows 9 is expected to be announced on the 30th of this month. So, you know, even though we talked about Microsoft earlier, kind of maybe in a downlighter, I did anyway. You know, what does this look like from the Windows Phone side, Kurt? I mean, are you know, things like the Universal Keyboard and different products like that for the phone and the tablet, is that going to be a plus for Microsoft?
You're saying, let's see here, Apple releasing you?
No. Microsoft released a... It's released a universal mobile keyboard, and it can work with iOS devices, with Android devices, with Microsoft devices.
Well, I think honestly, what Microsoft appears to be doing, and I hate to jump around a little bit, is they seem to be like playing all fields at the moment. I mean, they've obviously seen that they aren't quite the dominant in obviously mobile. They aren't quite dominant in. Well, mobile is the biggest one where I honestly see Microsoft is totally not even a player hardly. And Let's I'm going to back up a little bit. Sega. Used to you have Nintendo and Sega. Well, you had Atari. You had Nintendo and Sega. Mm-hmm. And then Sega failed. And instead of just completely closing their doors, they killed the Dreamcast and started making games for Nintendo and for other systems. So they adapted. Instead of saying, well, we're not in this game anymore, so let's switch over to this game, to this field. And that's essentially what I think Microsoft is doing. And Microsoft hardware has always been top-notch. Obviously, Apple's is top-notch right up there, too, or maybe higher, whatever. But if this is going to be as good as most other Microsoft hardware is, this is going to be good. This is going to work quite well.
You know, I watched a video on the Universal Keyboard, and it looked pretty cool. I mean, I have to admit it looked pretty good, and the ability to use different products. And once again, getting back to that article that you had earlier with the numbers showing how much Microsoft supported other products. It's kind of the same thing over again.
I mean,
you know, your article there hit the nail on the head. This is exactly what Microsoft is doing. So I'm kind of interested to see one of these universal mobile keyboards, see what it looks like. It was really small, too. The video showed. It looked to me like once you closed it, it would fit in the width of the palm of your hand. It was a little bit longer than that, maybe about a time and a half as long as your hand or so, but fit in the width of the palm of your hand because it folds over. And mm-hmm. then they just showed people just sticking it in a work bag or, you know, in a purse or whatever like that. So you know, Kurt, if you're looking for a keyboard for your purse, you'd be good to go.
Oh, why, thank you.
You're welcome. Just kidding.
And you're muted.
And now Kurt's not going to be talking on
the show after that. Sorry, I had to do that once. All right. I will try not to do that anymore.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, well, we... 655.
Yeah, one more deep dive article here. Now, Apple has some new apps coming out. We know that iOS 8 was released yesterday, and the Health Kit was supposed to come out with that, but it's been they prevented its release along with the launch of iOS 8. And HealthKit is designed to gather data such as blood pressure, weight from various health apps on the Apple devices. It can be viewed by doctors at one place. Regulated medical devices such as glucose monitors with accompanying iPhone apps can send information to HealthKit. And Apple released a statement that said, "We're working quickly to have the bug fixed in the software update and have HealthKit apps available by the end of the month." And Apple has also pulled some health care apps from its App Store that connect with HealthKit, such as MyFitnessPal and the CarrotFit. MyFitnessPal app, which supports integration with Apple's HealthKit, was temporarily removed from the App Store Monday morning to address some minor issues, MyFitnessPal said in a statement released. We're working with Apple on a solution. We'll have an updated version of the app without HealthKit piece back in the App Store shortly. Hmm. So, you know, some sort of major issue here with the HealthKit that was coming out. So HealthKit and Apple Pay, and these obviously bring up some security issues for Apple. You know, health, you're talking about HIPAA requirements. Apple Pay, obviously you're talking about all kinds of different financial requirements there. So, Kurt, what's your thoughts on Apple including all these things in a way that they're doing it? I mean, they're having a lot of regulations to comply to, and, you know, is this going to be good for them in the end?
And being Apple, they'll make it work. It might be the second or third iteration that they make it work, but I'm sure they can, they will make it work. Mm-hmm. Problem is, like you said, HIPAA, I hadn't even thought about that. I mean, there are so many little pieces and so many lawsuits that can come out after this. And
HIPAA, just so our listeners know, that's has to do with healthcare privacy.
After this issue with the celebrity photos that were leaked, I don't want to say leaked, but Apple insists there was no breach, but it doesn't look good to me, the consumer, after I think, okay, Apple can't keep track of my photos. Now I want them to keep track of my money, and now all of my health issues that I might have in my phone, you can put your weight, you can put your anything can be in there. I've done the upgrade to iOS 8, and there's a health thing on there. And it shows you, I can see all body measurements are there, just going down the line, body fat percentage, body mass index, height, lean body mass, weight. There's everything. Even blood glucose, your caffeine, calcium, all this stuff is all in there. But if they can't keep track of some photos I have, how am I going to trust them with all of my financial data and all of my health data?
Well, and that's PayPal's latest latest thing that they have out. PayPal brought out, which, I mean, this is scaring PayPal to death, because Apple Pay could knock PayPal out of their want to go into the pay at a location type business.
Yeah.
And they put out an interesting little banner. It says, "We the people want our money safer than our selfies. PayPal protecting the people economy."
That's good.
Has a cheesy looking guy on there. But anyway, it's kind of an interesting little banner from PayPal, and they're concerned.
You know, BlackBerry should have capitalized on this like hardcore. I mean, they should have, they're the first ones that had a true secure like network, and they're the true ones that have true push notifications for one thing. They should have said, our smartphone has never had this kind of a breach. They should have, their sales might, double overnight, which, would, be like 0.001% of the market, but...
Yeah, but you couldn't touch their cell phone screen either, so that kind of knocked them out of the market there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they have the Firestorm now. I don't know, was it called the Firestorm? I don't know. Anyway, they just need to hire us for marketing, and you.
Tech Talk Today for marketing. That's what they need. Well, we're getting right at the end of our show here, so I think we're just going to go ahead and wrap things up and skip our other two sections for today, unless Kurt already turned the music on yet, and he hasn't. So we're going to skip our other two sections since we're getting right at 7 o'clock. But to go ahead and wrap up for today, we do thank you for listening to today's show. And you always can find us on at Facebook on Tech Talk Today, WCCR Tech Talk on Facebook.com, and also Twitter at WCCR Tech Talk. And don't forget to listen to the podcast of today's show. And if you only caught part of it, you can do that by searching Tech Talk Today on iTunes, or by just taking a look at our Facebook page, and it'll be up there.
Mm-hmm. And let's see here. You have been listening to WCCR Tech Talk Today. And continuing on, we've been listening to 94.5 LPFM, Williamsburg, Kentucky. And this is the end of our Thursday lineup. Lineup is...
Today's Thursday, Kurt.
Yes, we're the last day. We're the last people up. So tune in, I guess, next Thursday. We're going to have to check the schedules for the students. So.
Well, yeah, we don't know the schedules, but we will be back next Thursday, 6 o'clock. Don't forget to get us there on WCCR 94.5 LPFM. And for tonight, I'm Justin Hensley.
And I'm Kurt Lawson. Thank you all very much for listening, and have a good night.